Hi, I'm Allison Hess.
And I'm Stephanie Graham.
Welcome to the Thousand Islands Playhouse Podcast. We have seven amazing shows to dive into for our 2026 season.
Join us as we talk to the artists that will make this season shine and get a behind-the-scenes peek at what's happening this summer, Dockside.
Don't forget to tune in
to give your ears a front row seat.
See you at the theater!
Welcome to the 2026 season of the Playhouse Podcast. We're recording today on the ancestral lands of the Haudenosaunee and Anishinaabeg peoples. My name is Allison Hess, and I am the Education and Engagement Manager here at the Thousand Islands Playhouse. I would like to welcome back my fantastic co-host, Thousand Islands Playhouse Artistic Associate, Stephanie Graham.
Hello. Hello. Glad to be back.
I am glad you're here as well. Stephanie, what have you been up to since we last saw you on the 2025 podcast?
Yes. So we produced a holiday pantomime, Jack and the Beanstalk, over in Odessa. Amazing. Here in Eastern Ontario. And then now I am currently being the movement director on A Midsummer Night's Dream at Stratford.
And you flew in, and by that I mean drove, for one day so that you could come record. So I appreciate you taking the time to chat with us.
I'm excited to launch 2026.
Yes, 2026. Awesome. All right.
For our first episode of the 2026 season, we're starting off with some satire with teeth with Frances Conkin's brilliant Women of the Fur Trade. Three women sit trapped together in a frontier fort, a Métis dreamer scribbling flirtatious letters to Louis Riel, a savvy Ojibwe trapper skeptical of rebellion, and a British settler worried about her absent husband. As they sip tea, banter, and weigh the fate of a budding resistance, they twist history into something fresh, fierce, and funny. Women of the Fur Trade reminds us that the women at the edges of history were never bystanders.
And today we have in studio the Women of the Fur Trade.
Here they are.
Here they are. Actors Joelle Peters, hello. Danelle Charette, hello.
Hello.
And Allison Beckwith. Welcome. Hi. Thank you for coming and chatting with us.
Thanks for having us.
It's very in the spirit, I think, of the whole vibe of the play, right? Of women talking.
Love that.
Absolutely.
Women talking. Yes, exactly.
The only difference, we don't have tea with us today, but no. Maybe we'll set a date for that.
Yes.
We always like to start with a short bio to introduce you to the audience. So Joelle, let's start with you. Playhouse audiences may have seen you back in 2017 in Only Drunks and Children Tell the Truth. As a part of our Beyond the Season event last year, acting credits include Dreary and Izzy with Theatre Northwest, The Election with Knightwood Theatre, Theatre Direct, Common Boots Theatre, and Theatre Passamurai, and, of course, Women of the Fur Trade with the Stratford Festival. On top of that, you are an award-winning playwright and the artistic director of Native Earth Performing Arts. Thank you for joining us.
I don't know how you have time for all of that, but...
Me either.
But thank you for finding the time to come chat with us today. So Danelle, it is your debut here at the Playhouse. Okay. Some of your recent credits include Two Indians with Magnus Theatre, Mamma Mia with Tweed and Company Theatre, actually directed by Stephanie Graham.
Yes. So glad to see Danelle again.
And Unearthing as part of the Festival of New Theatre at Canadian Stage. Mm-hmm. Welcome. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks.
And then finally, Allison, some of your recent credits include Liars at a Funeral with Drayton Entertainment, The Magic Flute with Opera Atelier, and Appropriate with Coal Mine Theatre. And you're also a member of the Tafel Music Chamber Choir. Thanks for being here, Allison.
Thank you for having me.
And it's also your debut here at the
Playhouse, isn't it? Yeah.
Awesome. Welcome. Thank you for joining us. How's GAN so far? How's GAN and Akwe?
It's great.
Yeah?
Having a good time in GAN.
That's good. We'll jump in with our questions. I think of all the questions, this is probably the most important. Frances's play is amazing, and I loved reading it. The process of just even reading the script was such a joy. And one thing that I loved is in the character descriptions at the beginning, she actually includes not just their character name, a description, but also their star sign. So I think very important. What are your star signs?
I'm a Scorpio.
Scorpio.
I am a Gemini.
Okay.
I am also a Gemini.
Oh, we got twin Geminis.
We found out our birthdays are 5 days apart.
They are.
Love that. Mm-hmm. What about you, Steph? What's your star sign?
I'm a Leo.
You're a Leo? And I'm a Virgo, which is why I work at administration. So for you three, how well did you know the history before you came and began working on this show?
I'm from Regina, so I feel, and I'm part of the Métis Nation of Saskatchewan, so I feel like I've known a lot about the rebellion my whole life, and that's where Louis Riel was hung, right, unfortunately. So we get a reenactment every year at the RCMP barracks in Regina. So I think people from there are pretty well educated on this trial.
Oh my gosh, that's fascinating about Regina.
I know.
And what about you? So, like, did you know much about the history of the rebellion or the resistance? It goes both ways, right? I've heard that, you know, I think it depends on the view. And, like, I think also over time, the kind of characterization of it has changed, but the rebellion, the resistance. Did you know much about it, learn about it growing up?
We had a unit in my grade 8 class about the formation of Canada as a whole. And it was very much, like, as much as a settler learns at the age of 13, and the textbook, it would be interesting to reread the textbook and the perspective of it.
Yeah, the framing.
Yeah, but I did read, as part of my school curriculum, a graphic novel by Chester Brown about Louis Riel, this biography, which I actually reread before coming to do this contract, which was really informative and had such a clear point of view with the way that all of the characters are illustrated. I found that really interesting, but Louis Riel is not someone I thought about since I was 13 years old, and coming back and kind of relearning in preparation to do this has been very interesting and important.
Very interesting. What about you, Joelle?
Yeah, I grew up in a small town in southwestern Ontario, and quite honestly, I think so much of the historical parts of, like, other provinces were glossed over, or at least that's how I remember it. It's just like everything's blending together. I don't know. Sure, there's this Louis Riel, and that's about it. So my education with the rebellion and Louis is just all a bit of a blur. And then getting to do this show, it's like, oh yeah, that's the stuff I wasn't paying attention to.
Joelle, you have quite a history with this play. You played Eugenia in the original Fringe production of Women of the Fur Trade in 2018, as well as the Stratford production in 2023. As Artistic Director of Native Earth Performing Arts, you co-produced Women of the Fur Trade in 2024 in collaboration with GCTC and the NAC Indigenous Theatre, and then worked as the Assistant Director on the revival later that year.
Yeah.
So what is it like to come back to this piece again and again and in so many different ways?
I feel like each instance has had, like, a couple of years in between. And I think, like, it's just grown so much since that initial Fringe production in Toronto in 2018. In that production, there were no men. So it was just the three women. We had, what kind of, I had a, for Gabriel Dumont, I had a Batman doll who, when you pushed a button on his chest, his wings would, like, pop out.
Amazing.
Which was incredible for, like, practicing comedic timing and, like, when do I want to, you know, release the wings. And then in Stratford, like, that was so, so big. Like, just felt, like, huge. And I got a tattoo out of it. Like, me and my Women of the Fur Trade, we all got matching teacup tattoos. And then taking over at Native Earth and doing Women of the Fur Trade there. It was just such a different production, so different from the Stratford version. And a lot of people talked about, like, oh, I like this one more. Oh, I like this one more. I feel like I couldn't compare them. They're just, like, different people doing it, so there's different impulses. And same with this one. Like, it's just we're following different paths, similar paths, but, like, still our own lived experiences. So it's just a whole new experience.
And you worked with Keith on the Stratford production as well, right?
Yeah, he was Louis Riel.
He was Louis Riel.
And he had a mustache.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And for our listeners, Keith Barker is directing this time.
Right.
I think it's actually such a gift to be able to revisit material with different people and different voices. And I think it sheds new light on the piece sometimes. I don't know if that's how you feel, but
yeah, I feel like this time around, I'm also discovering new things or things that I had thought about before in another production, but, like, oh, we don't have time to do this because you don't get a lot of time in theater to explore often or, like, enough. Yeah, we're sitting and rocking, but also looking at the rebellion and figuring out how to get out of this fort.
Danelle, when we had our kind of first day meet and greet and introduction, mm-hmm. you mentioned that this story feels personal to you in a few ways. Would you mind telling us a little bit about that?
Not at all. As I said earlier, I'm part of the Métis Nation of Saskatchewan. Both of my maternal grandparents are from the Qu'Appelle Valley. They're from Métis settlements just outside of Fort Qu'Appelle. My grandpa was from Labrette, Saskatchewan, and my grandma was from Katepwa, Saskatchewan. I think the connection to it is just the female ancestors that have walked this path in my family. I'm only the fifth generation in my family, so there's still two to go, which means that this is the story of my ancestors. I think of the women who sat and waited for change and or decided to stand and fight beside that change. And my kuka, my grandma's really close in my heart with this process. So,
oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. I've loved it so far.
Mm-hmm. Have you had a lot of opportunities to play Métis characters before?
No, this is my first time. And it's definitely Women of the Fur Trade is a dream show for me. And Marie Angelique is a dream role for me. So I'm feeling very, very lucky and very grateful. It's so fun. My dreams are all coming true.
Oh, that's awesome. That's fantastic.
Yeah. I love that.
Allison, you have quite an extensive background actually in classical music,
yes,
as well
I do.
As acting. So how do you find the two areas complement one another?
You know, it's interesting. I think music requires a more rigid technique, of course, because the container is smaller in terms of variability, what you can explore. There is still intense variability, but the similarity I'm finding with this show and when I work with scripts that are historical in nature or that have some basis in history, I find there with classical music, there's this kind of telephone line through time where you're with everyone who has performed it before and you can kind of feel the 17th or 18th century in the same way that you can feel when you do Shakespeare, everyone who has said the words before you. Mm-hmm. And with this show, even though it was written quite recently, there's that connection to history and you can kind of feel the ghosts in the room, or I can at least through this process.
Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm. We're all not just one thing too. And I find mm-hmm. that like so often we not box ourselves in, but separate these different aspects of ourselves. You know, you would be a different actor if you also didn't have this
yes.
experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
In that world as well. And
yeah.
how you'd be different, we don't know. But yeah,
well,
I love that element of it.
I feel very lucky to have music is very much part of my lineage. My family for generations have been musicians. Both my parents are classical musicians. And so I came up kind of in that world. I studied theater, but now I do both. And so they're both very close for different reasons.
Well, that's wonderful. I think the audience will understand this when they see the play, but it is very surreal. There's a lot of surreal mm-hmm. elements. You never know quite where it's going to go.
Nope. Mm-hmm.
Surprising. Yeah. In the best way. And so how do you as actors ground yourself in the world of the play when the surrealism and there's so many elements that are kind of out of left field, the way you focus yourself just to kind of go with the flow? Like, how do you, you know, get into the world?
It's each other for me. Mm. It's making sure that I'm connecting with everybody or like choosing those moments where I'm not connecting and wondering like, why am I not with them? Or like, what is the reason behind this decision I'm making? Like it's, yeah, making very deliberate choices in the realism mm-hmm. so that the absurdity is what it is.
Yes. I agree. I feel like these women, there's a youthfulness to them and their lived experience has been predominantly in this fort for who knows how long, yeah. really. And I think that there's the youthfulness plays into the surrealism because
yes.
they're just like little girls playing and the groundedness comes from you guys, of course. Like I think that's what brings the characters back into, oh, this is what's happening.
But when imagination plays such a big part, it is kind of like literally anything is possible then in terms of creative decisions that mm-hmm. we can make on the stage and in the rehearsal hall. And so having that freedom is so, so juicy as an actor to just go, yeah, I can. I have so many colors to choose from.
The play is so witty and funny. And then, as you said, it will take this turn and really nail home the seriousness of the situation for these characters.
Yeah.
How do you balance that levity and seriousness in these moments as actors?
A lot of it is trusting in what Frances wrote, because I think Frances is just so intentional with the way that they write and the story that they've built. And I have no choice but to trust what's already on the page. So
because it's so well written, the playfulness and the silly opens your heart so that the more intense moments pack more of a punch. And having the contrast makes both feelings more intense. Mm-hmm. It's human.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it's so beautiful how each of these characters are unwrapped. Like, we're not really sure who they are at the beginning. And then we learn so much more about them through the whole way. Mm-hmm. Was there anything when you read it or being involved in the beginning, how that unfolded for you or how it surprised you for each of your characters?
For me, it's the youthfulness that Marie Angélique carries at the beginning and her whole arc. I think that was surprising. I was saying I had like a breakthrough the one day where I was like, wow, this is the moment that she's gained some maturity and she's stepped more into her womanhood opposed to her girlhood. And I think that it's just really beautiful to see that these women grow from beginning to end. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For me, it was how small the world is for Cecilia, how tiny her worldview is, and how much of that is just to survive. If you have one job and it's to get as many babies out of your body as possible, and you wait, that's literally your job as a woman. It gives you more compassion for tiny or reductive worldviews. And the more her world grows in her relationships with these two Indigenous women, the more scary the world is for her. It's not what she thought it was.
Yeah.
I think Eugenia has been really interesting to discover, because there are times when Eugenia's world is so expansive. She gets to leave whenever she wants. Mm-hmm. She gets to go anywhere. There's just so many choices as an actor thinking, okay, so I think she went here. I think she did this. I think she did this. And then she came back to trade. Mm-hmm. She came back to the fort to trade and get some stuff for her family because she's trying to provide. And I think sometimes I can get a little caught up in like just how many choices there are to make with Eugenia. And Frances did the cool thing of like, well, you make the choice. I'm not telling you, mm-hmm. which is like a blessing and a curse.
I just love reading the script and reading Frances's stage directions. She's like a narrator. It's almost like a sixth character, right? Because the way that she describes the space is not just not a picture, but like...
It's a vibe.
It's a vibe. As yeah, mm-hmm. and again, in a podcast, she talked about how she writes stage directions for the vibe. Mm. What was the vibe like when you first read the play, listening to Frances's voice as you first approached the script? And I'm interested too with Joelle, because you did so many like workshops with her on it as well, how that translated from knowing her and working with them and then also seeing it on the page.
Frances had posted that they wrote this script for the Toronto Fringe. It was accepted. It got an award, so it was into the festival. And I was just so thrilled, and I was so hungry as an artist looking for work that I just sent like a little... I slid into Frances's DMs.
Yes,
and I was
you did.
Like, hey, I don't know if you're looking for anyone to help you in the background. I wasn't even really thinking about actually being an actor, or I wasn't brave enough to ask for that. But I was like, I just want to be involved. So if you need someone, I would like to do something with you. Thank you. And then Frances asked me to be in that Fringe production, and they directed it.
Oh, yeah.
It might have been one of the only times that Frances has directed it, actually, which is also interesting. Then going to future drafts, it just got so much more Frances. Their voice is so distinct and funny and real. Like, they are just such a pop culture fiend. that it's so, it would be such a different script without those stage directions. So I think it's just so integral to the story, actually. As actors, it feels like another way in.
I feel like she's made it really easy, like, for us to understand what the world is supposed to feel like. And the first time that I read it, it felt like the first time I was reading like a decolonized script, because for it, the stage directions were just funny in general. And you're like, you're just laughing through the whole thing. Like,
well, it's because it challenges like what traditional theater is. Yeah. And it's like coming up face to face with it. It's like, yeah, but it could also be this.
I was having such a good time when I read this script for the first time. So funny. Frances will say the floor is an odd sort of floor. There are just so many adjectives that are just, why was it described this way? And then it's up to you as an artist to interpret that, or just as a reader to interpret that in your head.
Or up to Keith to interpret it.
Keith does the heavy lifting of that. But it's so great. There's a beats joke. In a play, you will often have beat, B-E-A-T, to indicate a space, a stretch of silence in the conversation. And there are four beats in a row. And the last one is beets, B-E-E-T,
yeah,
as a vegetable.
I have had so many English teachers, drama teachers, high school teachers, period, reaching out being like, I need to bring my class to this because this play is not, and it's not part of the curriculum necessarily, like you don't have to use it, but history teachers, English teachers, drama teachers are using this play in their classrooms, I think, because even when you read it, it's such an enjoyable read and it's so accessible, and like the students really engage with it more than other plays, other histories. It's well known and well used in the school system, I think, because it is so fun, in the way that you read it, right?
Yeah. Digestible.
Yeah.
All right, you three.
All right.
You have now been here for a little bit. So how has your time been in Gananoque? Are there any spots or seen any spots that you're looking forward to checking out?
Okay, we did go to trivia.
At Maverick?
At Maverick. Yes, which was so much fun.
We have also had Greco's Pizza, which is delicious.
Really good.
The Hawaiian pizza.
Big fan.
Honestly, delightful. Everything at Greco's is great. Burgers, subs,
pizza. Shout out to Greco's.
Well, thank you three of you for coming and chatting with us. It's so great to get to meet you, get to chat with you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Perfect unison.
I love it. Your teamwork is impeccable.
We only met each other a week ago.
I know. This is kind of crazy. You're meshing. It's the magic of Frances and her writing and her plays and the three of you. Is.
And thank you to Mark Hunt for our theme music. And for more ticket information, please visit us at thousandislandsplayhouse.com.
See you at the theater.